This is John Moeller. And we invited Mark Reichert, the president of the Open Geospatial Consortium, to come here and talk about the OGC reference model and how there may be some relation of that to the idea of a reference model for spatial ontologies. Mark has been the president of the OGC for several years now. He formerly was with the National Imagery and Mapping Agency and its predecessor, worked with the vice president's office for the National Partnership for Reinventing Government in the United States and with the FGDC and a whole variety of different geospatial activities. So, Mark, go ahead.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the introduction. And good morning to everyone, and good afternoon for you in other time zones, perhaps evening. What I'd like to do is, as John mentioned, give you an overview of the OGC reference model and hopefully open up a little bit of discussion about how this concept might be applied or extended to SOCOP activity. The ORM, as we call it, it can't live without an acronym, so it's the OGC reference model, or ORM, is available on our website. If you go under standards, click on that page, and go to the OGC reference model, you'll get the entire document. You can statically print it, or you can use it as HTML. But its design is to provide an overview of OGC standards baseline. As OGC has migrated since its beginning in 1994, of course, you can imagine the standards framework has grown and grown. The ORM is a way for us to build a cogent story where we can discuss what that baseline does, how it operates, how it exists in different views. So it really allows you to get some insight into what OGC has done, to a certain extent what we're doing, and really apply those standards to some concepts of architecture. Can you all on the phone and WebEx, or are you able to see these slides okay?
Yes.
Thank you. So what we've done with the ORM is basically to organize it very similar to ISO's open reference model for open distributed processing. So it's broken down into five sections, and I'll quickly go through these, and hopefully I'll be able to reinforce what we're doing and then entertain some questions on for the SOCOP. So the first section is an enterprise view. This is where we're discussing, you know, what interoperability is about at its simplest level, provide some examples of how that's being addressed, talk about the OGC a bit in terms of its role in advancing interoperability. So obviously you're going to find a definition of interoperability. We take that from ISO, and it's also listed in the OGC abstract specification. I want to point out, too, that we deal with technical interoperability, but what drives our process are all the other issues, policy, legal frameworks, cultural differences. Those are the types of requirements that we get in our process to render a technical interoperability solution. So we're driven by user requirements. David Schell, our founder and chair, actually summed up business purpose pretty well, so I decided to put it in the briefing. And that is, he's saying what we're doing is facilitating a common picture of reality for different organizations which have different views of the same issue, the reality of the disaster, the urban planning issue. And what we're trying to do is allow them to deal with that issue collaboratively. One of the other ways to look at it is efficiency and cost and purpose. So after being in the government for 20 years and dealing with interface control documents and system design in the way we knew it back in the 70s and 80s, I have a different view of interoperability. And you know you don't have it when you're dealing largely with custom integration, high system lifecycle costs, unable to rapidly mobilize new capabilities. And as previous speakers have mentioned before, you have duplication of effort despite your efforts to try to prevent that. Now, there are occasions when a lack of interoperability is a really good thing. This might be one of them. So the square peg and the round hole really fits well. This is the case where you definitely want non-interoperability to be the case. Getting back to the core of the discussion, though, interoperability as implemented by OGC, and it is an implementation level, can be exemplified by the Web Map Service, one of our first web services standards. And it's developing a common protocol that any service can understand and respond to. And it's in its simplest form, a client, whether it's on your laptop or it's a service out there, can interrogate different sources of information with the same request and receive back information that can be fused into the user or the user application be viewed as a very complex map. We also in the ORM talk about, you know, what it means to have open standards. and I've listed some of the qualities there. We also talk a bit in Section 1 about the return on investment or benefits of open standards in the ERGC. And then we have a number of discussion topics in Section 1 on what is the ERGC all about and our mission. I'm not going to go into detail on that, but because I think most of you probably know ERGC well. But we do focus a lot on where OGC fits in the standards stack. We have de jure and de facto standards. We have domain and infrastructure response to the standards community. We sort of sit in the middle, creating the kinds of software interfaces to connect those worlds. So this graphic, in a very simple form, tries to demonstrate that case that we work very closely with the infrastructure standards organizations. We work very closely with ISO. And others like the European equivalent, SEND, and its Technical Committee 287, to try to bridge that gap and create implementation-level standards that make sense. Also, if you go to OGC, you'll find a series of abstract specifications. In many cases, if you open the cover, those are ISO standards. We work very closely to maintain connectivity and similarity in our abstract level. Just a quick comment on alliances. We have over 30 of them now. These are point-to-point formal agreements that allow OGC to work on various collaborative issues. We're usually doing a few things, one or more a few things. We're doing joint outreach on the value of location across the standard stack. In many circumstances, we're actually providing expertise on how groups like W3C, OASIS, and others can adequately and consistently represent location. And in other cases, we're doing joint testing and validation on complex issues such as how do you bring together the architecture, engineering, and construction environment with geospatial to create urban environments. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on through these alliance partnerships, and what I'm finding is that list is continuing to grow. Finally, the first section talks about implementation in the marketplace. One view of this is to talk about how products are being implemented and using the standards, whether they're traditional, commercial, or open source, or developed by someone, an individual. Those are listed on our website. We also have a program to allow for compliance testing and certification, so the document talks about it in that context. Moving from the enterprise level, we have an information view. And you can see the subchapters here. And many of you know the basics, but it really all is all about where and when. We're talking about somewhere, some when, and we're talking about it in the context of geospatial information, spatial referencing, and all the things that are necessary to orient yourself from an information standpoint. So when you go through Section 2, you're going to see a focus on spatial referencing. One of the things to point out, you can have a discrete location, which is a geospatial-derived coordinate reference system. You can have civic locations, as was explained by Doug before, which are spatial references that would need to be dealt with further to get to an exact location, and then things like coordinate transformations. The ability to render and display spatial information is discussed in Section 2. The context of geographic features. The whole context of geometry and topology. So all of these are mentioned in Section 2, and as you would guess, at a very high narrative level for the user just to get an understanding of how OGC relates to all of these different factors. Now, in there, you'll see discussions of what is a coverage, what is a feature, and all of that is explained with references and how you can then drill down into OGC's baseline and see more detailed documents or even documents from other standards organizations like ISO. We talked quite a bit about, on the information side, about encodings. OGC is one of OGC's primary encodings is GNL, and that's talked about in great detail. This is just a graphic representation of the support for GNL as it provides the geographic information. And I wanted to stop a little bit on this one. There's a great deal of work now taking what many people call the elephant, the 800-page or so document called GNL, and tailoring it out to meet specific community needs or specific purposes and profiles. This is just a partial list of some of the great work that's been done, both within the OGC process, but increasingly outside our consortium and the communities of interest. What I want to come back to at the end of my discussion is this area of community application schemas. I think based on Doug's discussion and John's before, there are some really right areas in here where I think we can continue to do some very practical things to highlight the value of spatial ontology semantics. SensorWeb. There are a lot of encodings involved in how to deal with sensors and sensor networks, and this is explained in this section. Observations and measurements is becoming a very dominant way of creating a structure for observables. And then there's a whole series of encodings dealing with sensors, as explained here. And again, the document doesn't try to go down and give you ultimate detail. It's just giving you a high-level reference with pointers into the OGC baseline to get more information on one or more of these areas. But together, these encodings and languages help you to get from the sensor to the application or the end user in a standards-based fashion. And they'll be used and coupled with specific services that have been developed by OGC that are discussed in the next chapter. Can't leave this without talking about metadata. We'll see a discussion in there about metadata. And some supporting services. One is security. OGC has been doing a lot of work with other standards groups on security protocols and security measures. A standard that OGC just recently released, I guess it's about a year old now, a year and a half, is GeoXACML, which is actually based on an OASIS XML encoding for access, but it has been enriched with a geospatial referencing capability, and that is now an OGC standard. The other area I think is really interesting and appropriate is rights management. How do you deal with, in a web services environment, issues of licensing and related factors? So you'll see a discussion on rights management as well. The third section is on geospatial services, and this is where you'll get an overview of the services architecture, discussion of OGC web services and how that's defined, and the different service classes that OGC has produced since its inception. You can't start that without a set of definitions, and the document will go fairly comprehensively in the definitions of what we mean by services, interfaces, and operations. And I would point out, too, there's variations. You'll hear discussion in the OGC reference model about coarse versus fine-grained. This has reference to whether or not the standards were built for the web or network environment or for the platform environment. So you'll see some of our standards in the early days were, I guess we would call, tightly coupled, and most of the web service standards be looked at as loosely coupled. So there's the OGC Web Services collection of interface standards. This is just a partial list. There's examples. I believe the Web Feature Service is shown as one of the examples. So obviously, a Web Map Service will render you a picture, which is fairly dumb. You get raster image, and you get a picture that's geospatially correct on the right datum. You can view it and interpret it, but you really can't go and interrogate the features in that because it's just an image. Web Feature Service provides features and attributes between services and clients. So now you can actually share the raw information and process it further to make a decision. There is a discussion about how to combine these in architectural views. And there's also a discussion, a comprehensive discussion on the service side of sensor web enablement, this ability to discover task, access sensors and the information they provide, and then move that through the web chain down to other applications or ultimately to an end-user decision. And that'll be a discussion of a number of different standards, including the sensor observation service, the sensor planning service, the sensor alert service, and catalogs, be able to register and find sensors and then interrogate them to give you the information you're looking for. Other standards that are involved are standards such as the Web Processing Service, which I'll talk about in a minute. But again, all of this is at a high level, presented to you in sort of an architectural form so you can get a context of the power of the standards with the ability to link through, to drill down to deeper information on each of these. So that leads me to the processing services, workflow, and service chaining environment. And this is where it really gets fun. Now you're able to, using workflow management tools or service orchestration, take all of these little independent services that are resident out there on the web, and assuming you have the authority to use them, be able to combine them and process out what to a user looks like a coherent process sitting on their laptop or their portable device, but it's actually invoking services around the world, perhaps. In addition to that framework that I showed you, one of the standards that's getting a lot of traction now is called the Web Processing Service. Think of it as an envelope. So you have a sensor or multiple sensors, You have a decision to make, but none of those sensors are really intelligible unless you process them independently and together to produce some sort of an algorithmic result. The web processing service is a way to encapsulate small to huge algorithms to do that processing anywhere in the service chain. It's an open standard envelope for processing, and it's getting a lot of traction in the geospatial world as well as in the broader IT world right now. Another facet of what OGC is doing, we're not creating the standards, but we're demonstrating the ability to apply orchestration, such as VTEL or Workflow Management Coalition, I think it's called Workflow XML, and other capabilities to be able to orchestrate services so they produce a meaningful, transparent result. This is just one example where in a wildfire context, we have a UAV flying over an area of active fires out west. That UAV is sending raw imagery down to a service. On the left, it's a web coverage service. Now, this is like a web feature service, but every pixel, you can get attributes. So if that imagery is multispectral, you can request a piece of that imagery, and you'll get all the pixels and all the values for each pixel, so you can process it. So let's go through a scenario. UAV is flying over a wildfire, downloading imagery to a web coverage service. This is an OGC standard-based service. A user requests information on the latest position of a fire. Well, a request goes to that server for multispectral, but that information's raw. You can't really deal with it exactly the way the analyst wants it. So it goes to another service called a web coordinate transformation service, where it's taken off its local coordinate system and placed on WGS84. Then it's passed off to an image classification service. Now, this could be a web processing service that has an image classifier in it. It's taking that multispectral now, and it's looking for a specific signature for heat. And it's rendering that image now with a specific indicator for fire. And then the orchestration takes it to the user, who combines that with other base information for reference and can understand in minutes from when that UAV provided the imagery as to where that fire is and be able to inform fire officials. So this was an actual demonstration that we did live in one of our previous test beds in conjunction with various government and industry members. So the whole concept of service chaining is discussed in the ORM and is, again, able for you to be able to go out and look at other references and drill down further. We also talked quite a bit about mass market, consumer services, and how standards are affecting that and how we are affected by that market and the standards activity. So you'll see references in there to Google Earth and Maps, KML, which you may be familiar with as an OGC standard now. But you'll also see all other discussion on things like GeoRSS, GeoJSON, and others like Open Location Services. And this is just a summary of our OpenLS standards. How many of you in the room are aware of OpenLS? Okay, basically it is think of it as a geo-mobility server out there. Any device that you have that's location-aware, whether it's GPS or network-derived, coders can use this standard to develop essentially an application once and allow it to apply to different devices and different networks to do things like navigation, discovery, presentation, those types of things. So it's a way for OGC to be able to enable mobile devices to be part of this larger framework and provide a window into the Internet from location devices and the various walled gardens that are out there that you pay monthly fees for. So the fourth section is a viewpoint on patterns of deployment. So what you're going to see in here is a discussion on publish, find, bind, which is the concept for web services, and then examples of how that's invoked for portals and clients, different multi-tiered architecture concepts, and applications of spatial data infrastructure, as well as the geospatial web. Well, if you don't know this one, I guess we're missing the day and age, but this is the publish, find, bind discussion. Here's an example of the OGC web services architecture in terms of clients, application service tier, and processing service tiers. And as you move deeper into the document toward examples, you'll see implementations that follow this pattern, so you can get an idea of how communities are building this out. Doug will probably identify with this one. Reference architecture service distribution, where you're seeing portals and accessible services through the portal and independently. And then GEOS, which was talked about earlier this morning. GEOS is advancing through a series of pilots, a definition of architecture, And that architecture is basically, I would say, following the reference model sort of concept. There are deliverable documents coming out of these pilots that are helping to refine their view of what the architecture looks like. So here's one example, an engineering viewpoint of that GIS architecture. Implementations, final chapter. So we're looking at how to get toward implementations. We look at it from a vendor side or a developer side, so that's how do we test and implement and get compliance. We also look at the registrations of implementations that are out there on the market, and then networks of use. So from one viewpoint, we're looking at implementations out in the market. If you go to our website and click on implementations, you can see all the companies and individuals who have volunteered their products and services that use one or more of our standards. This is probably one of the more heavily viewed areas of our public website because this is a fairly good, it's not complete, but it's a fairly good listing of the products that implement our standards. And a subset of those are products that have been tested as compliant and have been certified by OGC as compliant. Here's an example that you'll find in the document. This is the GIS flood protection and response scenario done in one of our pilots. And you'll be able to follow through that, how the reference model and the standards apply to that architecture. And all of this, I think, is complementary with the global spatial data infrastructure, the concept of catalog holdings, metadata records, discrete data holdings out there that are all available using open standards and accessible to the larger infrastructure. So the whole idea is to minimize the redundancy, get to the data closest to source, reduce the deployment cost, and increase the ability to mobilize new capabilities rapidly. So that's basically fundamentally the spatial data infrastructure view of what OGC does. So looking at that document and going back to John's request on what can we do, I looked at it from an OGC perspective. We have a reference model. It's about, I guess, 3 or 4 years old now. It's in the second revision. Down to about, I think, 30 pages, which is fairly short for the degree of implementation that OGC has achieved. But we're going into a revision cycle, so I think it would be really timely to take a look at the work that's being done, not only within the consortium, but more importantly outside the consortium, in the community, and try to begin including some of these in the various chapters as references. And then go further than that, I think we need to keep looking at ways in which the SOCOP and OGC and other concerns can get together and do joint activities such as experiments to extend the exemplars, the practical usage of ontologies and semantic techniques, extend the exemplars and then to reinforce that in documentation in all of our organizations. So I look at one geology as a real potential low-hanging fruit area. Doug talked a bit about that in his previous discussion, but they've essentially used the surveys around the world who have gotten together using OGC Web Map Service, Web Feature Service, and they've developed mappings, semantic mappings from their language and from their attribution of geologic information into a common vocabulary. And there's a long way they can continue to go as they apply these techniques to overcome barriers of language and attribution, differences in semantic attribution. I think that would be one great way to maybe do an experiment that would extend that and then bring these groups together to help with that process. An experiment in OGC, step back a bit, is a formal process in what we call our interoperability program of prototyping. And the members and non-members can get together and agree on a charter, agree on an objective, and actually achieve that objective, which would be to extend a standard or one or more standards. It could be to come up with the best practice on how to best use standards from the OGC and other organizations. So to produce the deliverable would be a very helpful document to take that work to the next level. Other areas that I think might be really appropriate are semantic sensor network applications. There are a number of them out there now. One that I can point to rather quickly is called the hydrologic sensor web. If you look that term up, hydrologic sensor web, you'll find the Esk River catchment in Tasmania. You may think that's rather remote. But the research organization in Australia has basically used OGC, W3C, and other standards to bring together the hydrologic sensor networks in a single catchment that are run by 5 different agencies. And they were able to do it quickly using open standards, to get that integrated data. But they didn't stop there. They're adding semantic and ontologic techniques to bring in models and tap sensors that are being used by farmers and others. They're incidental to the area, but they're able to bring those sensor data in and refine automatically or semi-automatically some of the models they're using to forecast drought, forecast floods, to forecast pollution problems. And it's a really interesting use and combination of spatial, ontologic, and semantic techniques. Same thing goes for the sensor. I think all these things combined, hydrologic, there's some meteorological work that we're doing, that might also apply. So I would just suggest that maybe there's some real low-hanging fruit that we can go after to not only do some collaborative work, but then to document it in our reference model as exemplars. The last thing I would like to say is that we're deeply engaged at a very practical level of implementation standards development. So anything we can do to identify and socialize new semantic and ontological topics into the OGC would be greatly appreciated. I don't think right now, if you, and Doug and others, leaves, I don't think right now in the consortium you'll see a heavy emphasis on semantic ontologies. Some. I think you'll see the bulk of that in the community. But it would be really interesting to see if the members would appreciate an opportunity to focus and tackle a problem, maybe similar to some of the problems that Doug discussed or John before. John's examples are really interesting. We're getting together in December at our next meeting with on open floor plans with about three other standards organizations. And I know that John's work would fit right into that, indoor location, indoor navigation, indoor referencing, spatial reasoning, not necessarily in a geo concept, but in a local reference concept. And I think it would be really great perhaps to look at that summit in December as a potential point of discussion for next steps. And so with that, I just hope that this was a useful discussion. Again, the OGC reference model is available on our website. I recommend that you take a look at it and provide feedback. If you don't like it, let us know. If you see something that needs to be fixed, let us know. It's meant to be a community document. With that, I'll open it up for questions, if anybody has any.
Questions? Does OGC have any formal roadmap for integrating or adopting semantic technologies?
Well, we have a roadmapping process, and that rests with our chair of the technical committee and with our OGC architecture board and the working group chairs. But I would be willing to bet that we probably don't have a heavy emphasis on semantics right now, Jeff. Doug, you're on the OAB. Is that a true statement? So I guess I mentioned earlier, we're aware of it. We've done work with it. But there's not a lot of direct activity in the consortium right now, in the consortium, in this area. So if requirements are introduced, and there are many members in the room, and members of the public can bring them in, and the OGC members think it's reasonable, they'll act on it. So I would suggest that we start identifying potential requirements to bring into the OGC for discussion. Luis, you should get the mic.
Luis, wait for the mic.
And I think for the past 4 years, there has been one meeting at the DC meeting for one location of time where semantics are discussed. So at least there is a space for some of us that are interested to discuss it and to show, well, this is how we're tagging metadata records and this is how we're doing semantic mediation and all of them.
Yeah, we do have a domain working group that's set up for this. It's been inactive lately, but it could be reactivated rather quickly.
I'd like to see the OGC concentrate on the practical side of the semantic ontology efforts because we're struggling with this kind of push-pull with academic side of it. And academically, it's interesting, but most of your OGC membership has both feet in the real world and they're building real applications. So be very interested in migration strategies, practices, those kinds of things. I saw some really good stuff in Doug Bruce that are good, reasonable steps for moving infrastructure. And I've modeled similar things from the department side, too, but I'm not nearly as rich as what he's done. So my personal opinion is the OGC could be incredibly valuable to worldwide if they concentrated on the how do I make this real as opposed to looking at ontologies for the sake of looking at ontologies.
We wholeheartedly agree, and the first thing our chief architect will tell you is he's not interested in looking at ontologies for the sake of ontologies. what he's interested in looking at is representing member interests for hard, well-defined, practical implementations of these techniques. That allows us to drive rapid field implementation. If you think about it, if we stayed in the surreal world and we developed a solution, how quickly would it be adopted? Yeah. But if we stick to the urgent needs of our members and define in the context of those needs, I think we can probably mobilize rather quickly once we come up with a good solution. So I agree. And as an OGC member, maybe we can bang heads together with others. Any questions from folks on the phone? I'll take that as a no. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mark. Now let's move on to our next speaker, and this is one that will be presented via webcast to whatever we need to do to connect our next speaker, and that is Jean Berdour. John is a senior researcher with the Center for Topographic Engineering. I think that's the correct title, in Sherbrooke, Ontario. John is part of the Natural Resources Canada organization. And I think most importantly for the SOCOP workshop, he was one of the leads for the development of the North American metadata profile, a profile of the ISO metadata standard, and is the project lead for ISO TC211 work on ontologies. And as soon as we get the presentation up, we'll have you begin, but we'll turn it over to John for any introductory comments you want to make.
Okay, thank you, John. I hope that everyone hear me correctly. I'm basically working at the Center for Topographic Information in Sherbrooke, Quebec. That is part of Natural Resources Canada. And for this presentation, I will wear the hat of project leader of PT 19150 on ontology and PT 19101 on the revision of the reference model at ISO TC211.
Just wait for.
Right, I'm just waiting for the presentation. Yeah. Should I put on my presentation on my computer? Is that the way it is?
Just wait for a minute. Leo's working on it.
Gary, we can actually see your PowerPoint, so if you bring it up on your PowerPoint, it will be shared, at least previously.
Do you have your machine up?
Yeah.
Okay. Can't actually see you. Let me try it on mine.
Request to control. Hello?
Yeah?
Have you requested control?
It's just my phone.
Oh.
It's pending. It says the request control is pending. So should I do something different? I'm in control of the share screen. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. I'm going to bring up your baby. Yeah, I know. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I thought he was gaining control.
Yeah, but he's controlling Gary's desktop.
Right, but we don't see anything on our screen.
Let me. Would it be possible to just put my presentation online at your end?
Yeah, why don't you just send it? And can you send it an email? You have it? Oh. Okay. No, we'll do that. We'll you know what it is. So I think I can.
So should I put click on my computer screen? Do you want to share?
No, just to let us know, and we'll move the slides.
Okay. Do you see the slide at the moment?
Not yet.
Put on.
Okay.
Probably because you can't transport it.
Does it function F8 on your machine?
No.
No. No, just hang in there, too.
I do nothing.
It just wasn't connected.
Oh, okay.
Okay, John, you can go ahead.
Okay. You have my slide online?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on one second.
Don't see those slides now?
No. People on the phone aren't seeing the slides yet.
Okay, not yet.
Can you see him now?
Yes.
Hey, yeah.
There now.
Okay, John.
Thank you. So it gave us just a few minutes break. So thank you very much again. Here you have the outline of my presentation. So basically I'll do a quick overview of the project 19150 and ontology, and also I'll give you just an overview also about the work for the revision of the reference model at ISO TC211. Next. Okay, anthropology of geographic information is a main preoccupation of many organizations, and more specifically in the standardization activities. ISO TC211 has progressed quite significantly in the, during the last 15 years in the syntactic anthropology of geographic information, but also recognize the fact that the importance of semantics in its activities. Next. So in ISO TC211, we have reached a high level of structure in terms of data. We have also simplified the sharing and the use of geographic information, and have contributed to support the direct access of geographic information through the web. Next. Okay, however, the web has progressed towards the semantic web, and can be compared to now a worldwide database. But geographic features are described in different manners, which complicates the interoperability and also the benefit of the richness of those descriptions. And this is why semantic interoperability takes its importance within ISO TC211. Next. PT 19150 on ontology is a preliminary work to collect and compile information and to investigate how ontology and semantic web approaches can benefit the ISO TC211 objectives. Also, the project aims to recommend to TC211 actions to support semantic interoperability and the semantic web. Next. So far, the project team had 4 meetings. You have the list here. And we have published our final report last May, just before the ISO TC211 meeting in Molde, Norway. Next. The outcomes of the project team were the review of ISO TC211 objectives, the development of a common understanding of the semantic web and ontologies, the review of ISO TC211 related works, the list of relevant issues for ISO TC211, the values of ontology and semantic web, and finally the recommendation. Next. The ISO TC211 objective is to develop a family of standards, international standards on geographic information that enable interoperability of geospatially enabled computers and systems and data. Next. Interoperability of geographic information can be described through the communication process between two agents, each one adding its own ontology to formulate queries to databases, to interpret queries, to answer to those queries, and finally to understand the result. As you can see in this slide, it is a bidirectional process. So everything that happens in interoperability, there's two agents involved, and they have to communicate together. Next. Semantic web. Well, basically, semantic web, all of us know about this. It's to come up with a web of data and information that is processable by computers. So that's a progression from what we are used to do in the enterprise at the moment. Next. The definition of ontology in ISO 27001 is as this formal representation of phenomena with an underlying vocabulary, including definition and actions, that make the intended meaning explicit and describe phenomena and their interrelationship. And basically, it is a foundation to the success of the semantic web and provide meaning of the data that, in a format that machines can understand. And at the end, data can derive its semantics from ontology. And this would be not only useful, but essential to support integration of heterogeneous data across communities. Next. Here you have small list of ISO 27001 related works with ontology. At the first level, we have works on terminology. We have a project on that describes the terminology that is used within ISO 27001 and can be also useful for other groups. There's works on registration, and we've seen some application earlier on of that standard. We already talked about geodetic codes and parameters, which is essential to understand coordinate reference system, and also with data quality. We have also works related to content description, ISO 19109 for rules of application schema, 19110 for feature cataloging methodology, and others. And also, which is really important, I would guess, in our community, it's the concepts that are defined through a number of UML schemas within the different ISO TC211 standards. So in 103, we have some concepts defined for conceptual schema language. In 107, we have the spatial schema and all the geometric constructs that are required. 108, temporal schema. 115, metadata. 123, schema for covered geometry. And so on. So there's a lot of concepts that are defined within those schemas that would be useful to share as ontologies for the community of geographic information. Next slide. The values of ontologies are in different aspects. Interoperability across domain. It would provide automatic machine reasoning and inference. We might be able to move to knowledge description instead of information. We would be able to focus on online access of information and knowledge. And ontology will allow us to expose ISO TC211 to other communities that are not aware of the special domain. Finally, this is an essential component to interrelate and associate different concepts together. Next slide. Other relevant issues for the project 19150 are a review of the reference model. At the time being, the reference model talked about semantics, but we need to ground better the semantic as part of our reference model. The other issues covers the rules for application ontologies, how to develop application ontologies, also the introduction of ontologies as part of product data product specifications, and also applications. The developing of content is something more and more important with respect to ISO 13011. There's a lot of requirements that ask us to develop ontologies, high-level ontologies to define content. That is a more pragmatic orientation, and for the purpose of ISO 13011, we think that developing a top-level ontology which will allow the mapping between different domains. Next slide. Other relevant issues? Well, we think that reasoning and inference is something of high importance. We have talked earlier about the need of special operator. This is defined as part of ISO 19107, ISO 19125, and that could be developed as part of RDF, RDFS, and all those. We think that semantic operators would be required also to develop a similarity or to assess the similarity or proximity between concepts. And we finally, the translation of ISO TC211 UML models in semantic web languages is something that would be important. And finally, we have to investigate tools and methodologies for developing ontologies. Next slide. So the first recommendation of the project team was to review the ISO TC211 reference model, as I mentioned, and to better ground the semantics, ontologies, and semantic work as part of the reference model. Next slide. The next recommendation, the second recommendation, would be to cast ISO TC211 standards so they can benefit from and support the semantic web through our ontologies. So we think about moving our UML, as I mentioned, to OWL, and those ontologies, those OWL ontologies, will be complementary to our existing UML model. We don't think that we should just replace the UML. We think that we still need the UML, but we still have a there's a place for having OWL ontologies, and OWL DL derivation will have to take place eventually. As part of that, we have to have in mind that it is possible to develop ontologies from UML in different ways. And for the purpose of ISO TC211, we want to have our ontologies, consistent in our series of standards. So we need to develop rules for our ontology that will allow us to have a consistent set of ontologies that would be useful for the community. Next slide. Developing content ontologies, as I said, it's something that is highly required for integrating different databases, different type of data coming from different communities. So we have already started some work related to that. We have a project on land classification, land cover classification system, and we have also a project on the land administration domain model, which is a starting point. And we believe that there will be others that will be required, and we are working, or we want to work also with our different liaison to develop business cases for content ontology. Next slide. Service ontologies is also something that is requested. There's a lot of services that are developed for geographic information. We know that there are web services, web feature services, web mapping services, and others that are developed. But to navigate through all these services and have the content or the purpose of these services, these have to be accessible on a semantic way. And that's why we need or we plan to revise the existing ISO 19190, which is about services, to enhance that standard for the discovery of services based on ontology. Next slide. Finally, as I mentioned, we think that semantic operators will be required. We already talked about operators for spatial operators and things like that, but to relate concepts together and to match different concepts from different ontologies, we think that semantic operators will be necessary, and this is something that shall be initiated in the coming months. Next slide. So let's talk about the revision of the reference model. The reference model defines the framework for standardization in the field of geographic information. And last week, we have initiated the revision of the reference model during the ISO-TC 2011 meeting in Quebec City. The objectives are, for this revision, revisiting the definition of interquality in the geographic information context, to precise the role of semantics and ontologies as well, to include the role of the web, which was not part of the is not part of the current reference model, to update relationship between standards, to introduce support of semantic web, to address newly submitted comments that have been that we got from the ballot of this new work item proposal, and to harmonize with the standard that has been revised in the past, in the more recently, I would say. Next slide. So the issues related to the this revision of the reference model comes from the development in computer science and in geographic information, development from the web, mobility, and ubiquitous computing that have progressed tremendously during the last 10 years. We also want to address the GeoWeb, which has become a reality in the last years with web services, with XML encoding. We just talked about GML and KML. This is something that has to be reflected in the reference model. We want to put in the reference model the fact that more and more registries and registers will be developed and made available on the web to support the semantic aspect in geographic information. And also semantic and interoperability, semantic web and geosemantic web needs to be addressed at least through knowledge, ontologies, inferencing, OWL, and content standards. Next. Also, there's a number of specific reference models that have been developed during the, let's say, five or eight last years, and we have to look more deeply into those reference models, and we are thinking about to what extent we should integrate them or just introduce them and leave them as they are at the moment. So there's a number of questions related to that. Next slide. As part of the new reference model, there will be a number of candidate terms and symbols that will be included. So we have a beginning of the list of those here, but I'm sure there will be others that will be integrated in the the new reference model. Next slide. There's also a number of additional issues that need to be discussed. We have a continued discussion about the relationship or the similarity between ontologies, GFM, which stands for the general feature model that has been, that is described as part of the rules for application schema. What is the similarity or the linkage with the application schema with ontology and also with future guidelines. So this has to be clarified, and the reference model will provide an overview of those and the linkage between these those elements. Also, data description at the moment, if you think about feature catalog and all the way we describe the data through a dictionary or a catalog, data description is currently a component of data administration. And this is a something that comes from the old view of geographic information. So we think that, data description is an inherent part or an inherent component of data that allow reasoning and capabilities. So this relationship has to be revised and upgraded eventually. Next slide. So here we have the current definitions of interoperability as part of the ISO 19101. Which for interoperability is ability of a system or system component to provide information sharing and interoperation cooperative process control. And for semantic interoperability, it refers to applications interpreting data consistently in the same manner in order to provide the intended representation of the data. And it may be achieved using translator to convert data from a database to an application. And I'm sure you, when you look at those definitions, and when you look at those definitions, you think that it's a little bit old, and it has progressed. Interoperability and semantic interoperability has progressed in a way that we have to revise and upgrade those definitions. To make sure that we progress in the right way with ontologies and semantic web. So this is something that is on the table for the project. Next slide. So far, UML has been used to support semantic interoperability and other languages such as OWL need to be integrated in the ISO 19100 series. And as I mentioned, we want to integrate these other languages such as OWL in a way that they are complementary to UML. We will still maintain our UML model. This is something that is useful and describe the richness of the concept and the information that is part of ICT-211. But eventually, to adhere and to move with the semantic web, we need to support other languages, and OWL is one of them. Next slide. So just to give you an idea of in the background, what we have is the description, the high-level description of the different aspects that are handled through the reference model. So we have in the background the universe of discourse, we have conceptual model, we have conceptual formalism, and as conceptual formalism, there are a number of conceptual schema languages that allows us to develop conceptual schema. So here in the blue label, what you have is the different approach of ontology that I tried to map on this schema. So at the from the real world, This is the ontologies as developed in philosophy. And for conceptual model, we have ontologies as developed in artificial intelligence. And for conceptual schema language, we have now AWO that allows us to develop global domain and application ontologies that are the information that would be useful for applications and for and to integrate data from different places. Next slide. So to conclude, the semantic web brings us a new vision and technologies to enhance interoperability across disciplines. Ontology is an underpinning in the semantic web vision, and adherence to the semantic web by ISO TC211 would allow us to have a smarter geographic information interoperability between different data sources. And it will allow ISO TC211 standards to reach a wider community and to support a broader variety of applications. It will require from ISO TC211 additional work, review of the reference model, providing UML models and OWL ontologies, and certainly more others, more other work. And finally, ISO TC211 will play a more significant role with respect to content standardization and to provide high-level ontologies that allows community or different groups to use those ontologies to relate their work together and enhance interoperability of geographic information at the end. So that completes my presentation, and thank you for your attention, and I'm open to questions.
Thank you very much, John. Let's see if there's maybe one question or so, and then we'll move on. Anybody on the phone or here in the room have a question?
So you talked about a high-level ontology. Can you describe whether you're going to get into developing something that relates to a feature typing, or what is the high-level ontology going to consist of?
Yeah, I mean, the high-level ontologies means definition or of concepts that can help different communities to share their information. As an example, the land cover classification systems is, well, different countries have their own classification system. And at the ISO TC211, what we aim is to develop a middle language or a high-level language that will help to migrate or integrate classification land cover classification data from different countries in a way that it could be used together for global issues, for instance, and maybe to move from data from one classification system to another.
Okay, let's conclude this presentation. We need to move on. We have three more presentations scheduled before lunch. So shall we press on and try to get those done before lunch? We have Leo talking on ontology and control vocabulary in the intelligence community. Luis talking about a project that he's working on, continuing from a discussion he introduced last year, and then ontology registry. So we can get through these fairly quickly. So I won't introduce Leo. I think most of you know him, and he's ready to go.
Hi, folks. I want to take this opportunity to also make an announcement that for lunch and then after lunch, you'll have to be escorted if you have a visitor's badge by a MITRE employee. So just look for a MITRE employee. Or if you're a government employee, you don't need to be escorted. Okay, I'm going to try to make up a little time. So what I'd like to do is just describe some work that we did last year. Kind of more general than spatial ontologies, but it's applicable to spatial and spatial ontologies and vocabularies. I'll tell you a little bit about this ontologies and controlled vocabularies framework, give you some information about the framework, some target capabilities, and a roadmap. First of all, everyone online can see this?
Yes.
Okay, good. So we were asked to provide some guidance last year by the intelligence community CIO office to develop a collaborative ontology and controlled vocabulary framework, which would include development, management, and implementation. Our first phase, which was last year, 2008, we really assessed the current state of the world as far as the intelligence community was concerned in terms of controlled vocabularies and ontologies, and also had an intensive workshop to gather requirements for target capabilities. We surveyed the community and tried to find out what was available immediately and what could be shared. And then we developed this framework that really estimates target capabilities and provides guidance for achieving them. And the idea then was that we'd have at least two future phases, 2009 and maybe 2010 beyond, where the framework would be really refined, instantiated, refined, and support a pilot implementation with the eventual idea that it becomes kind of institutionalized and becomes a real program under a real organization. And the point was to rapidly and continuously improve semantic and structural interoperability across the IC. What we were addressing was, to raise the bar for both the structural and semantic interoperability. So in this diagram, we see three major objects, entities of interest, controlled vocabularies, and ontologies, and some of their high-level relationships. So entities of interest are what, the intelligence community is interested in, what things are out there that are potentially, hazardous for the USA, and find out the relationships among them. There's a lot of fragmented intelligence sources that come in. You can imagine that the range of data is just huge and tremendous in tremendous amounts, too. And so the controlled vocabularies are really name and describe these entities of interest, and of course the entities of interest go through controlled vocabularies. Well, controlled vocabularies are also, if you really want to go beyond and use the semantics, you need more than just controlled vocabularies, and you need ontologies that really represent what those vocabularies mean. So the ontologies define the controlled vocabularies, and they also, therefore, model the entities of interest. So controlled vocabularies really address structural interoperability, whereas ontologies address semantic interoperability. So what is the framework? Well, the framework was an end-to-end approach for collaborative development, management, governance, implementation of both ontologies and controlled vocabularies. Try to define, target capabilities, processes, principles, and best practices, really to codify what would be required if you wanted to address controlled vocabularies and ontologies as enterprise assets. So it's a shift to doing things in more ad hoc fashion, perhaps with individually in particular agencies or organizations, and now begin to address these things at an enterprise level. And then, of course, the point is that, it has to benefit the intelligence analyst. So how would it do that? By improving enterprise information sharing and exchange capabilities, enabling the preservation of the context of the information from the disparate sources. Obviously, search and retrieval and discovery capabilities could be improved. And then also intelligent information aggregation and potentially visualization for the analyst.
Yes.
Pardon? Okay. Yeah, you might want to be on mute online, whoever's talking right now. Hello? Do you want to mute your phone, please? Hello? Thank you. But also improve advanced analytic capabilities, such as, for example, disambiguation, semantic disambiguation, entity correlation, and even things beyond that, link analysis with semantics, associated with semantics, and even predictive analysis. So, of course, the enterprise benefits because now you have continuous and measurable improvement in your information sharing and analytic capability. I'll step back. One of the ideas behind the framework was that it can be instantiated in many organizations, many communities. So we focused on the intelligence community because that was our primary concern, but we think that the framework would be instantiated in probably many, many kinds of organizations that really want to address the same issues about how you treat your assets, these vocabulary and ontology assets at the enterprise level. It also supports centralized planning, but also distributed execution, right? So the communities of interest, that's a paradigm which is bottom-up. Typically, you want to share information with another community, you come together and establish a community of interest. So that may not be an enterprise level, but it may percolate up. And in any case, you probably want to have a rationalized process for communities of interest rather than often the typical Wild West that exists in the federal government. And you want to address this enterprise-scale information challenges by focusing on this cross-domain information assurance. We have issues within the intelligence community of also, you know, different classification levels, different sharing policies. And then enterprise standard support and mediation of data sharing agreements across organizations. It also will assist in building trust in this establishment of kind of a meta community. It promotes transparency and reduces waste because you're viewing these things as reusable intellectual products that you know can assist the information systems, and so you maintain these as real assets, reducing wasted time and money. Inefficiencies, redundancies, and additional rework. And then you make this enterprise semantics really more explicit and transparent. So, and then the final benefit is for developers and implementers. So at the enterprise level, infrastructure level, it enables a collaboration space and tools, common tools, services that will assist the organizations in developing their vocabularies, ontologies, providing guidance. It enables the intelligence community to focus on developing and implementing the ontologies as opposed to building infrastructure to support. So you can view this as an enterprise library of high-quality, emerging high-quality ontologies-controlled vocabularies surrounded by services that enable developers and users to use those. And then enterprise-level technical support because you want to raise the bar to improve the quality, reusability, and repeatability of designing and using ontologies controlled vocabularies. And then also we address governance, so it provides a venue to resolve challenges and to address enterprise-level guidance. Here's a small picture. It's a large number of individuals who have to participate in this, everyone from communities of interest, linguists, analysts, ontologists, prospective advisory council, application service developers, the support team for the ontologies controlled vocabularies, and again, standards groups, internal and external. With the center cloud, if you will, of the framework providing these collaboration tools, implementation support, really a registry and repository with a catalog on top and management services. Enables management of terminological services so that if you're a community of interest, you're using one terminology, one vocabulary, you can speak to the others and also have representation by the ontologies that you need. This is the kind of a notional capability model. You see the upper left box is the continuous improvement. In other words, we want to develop maturity models. This is maybe the first step. If you're familiar with the Software Engineering Institute's old CMM model, computer maturity model, you know that the bottom rung is typically ad hoc, right? So ad hoc processes that aren't repeatable and aren't rationalized by the individual organization. Well, we want to develop maturity models, and we're in progress on this, that enables the enterprise, the community as a whole, to progress, evolve over time to higher levels in terms of, in particular, their use of semantics, using control vocabularies and ontologies. Metrics over time become more and more important to be able to clarify where you need to go, what you've accomplished, the costs and benefits. Also includes a set of common tools. A distributed registry repository, but also servers and services based on, the use of a catalog and terminologies that enable developers and users to actually use those. And then, collaboration across the communities of interest, but also agencies and across the entire enterprise. The services, obviously a vast range of services, everything from governance to implementation support, technical support, training, outreach, life cycle management, and infrastructure management. This is just kind of repeating what I mentioned earlier, that this was initially in three phases. And so this was the phase one, if you will, from last year, which we accomplished provided this overall management framework. The idea this year was to continue the design, begin initial pilots. Well, things have evolved. Basically, the tasking that's being done is informed by the framework, but there was some also additional low-hanging fruit that we had to address based upon, other needs or organizations within the intelligence community. But we expect that this will continue and the need for such a framework will only increase in the future. And then the idea then was that in 2010, some of these pilots would begin to be deployed. Now, it may be the case that there may be an executive agent within the community that will assume a lot of the role of supporting this framework because the emphasis is on controlled vocabularies and ontologies, in its own right, in this executive agent that would, you know, perform the work for a specific purpose within the intelligence community. And that's it. Questions? Yes.
Yeah, that's probably the first time I've heard you brief that I actually understood you, so that's good. next thing, though, on your, I like your framework, but I was wondering if you'd look at some of the work we've modeled in the DoD Metadata Working Group, because we also model characteristics of what we call a well-behaved authoritative body, because it goes to whether you trust that community of interest or not. Because like, unlike you, I don't think communities of interest are Wild Wild West. They're actually... They have categories of maturity in it among themselves, and there's some that are exceptional and some that you just want to run away, launch a tactical nuke at them. So I was curious, the IC has, they're a bit more disciplined than the average, but I was wondering if they have similar dynamics on the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's probably used to be more of the Wild West. Now there's degrees of maturity. What you'd like to have is communities of interest that really have provided some assistance into, you know, coming up with comparable products that are just as, you know, readily used by other communities of interest, so establishing a rational process.
Have you started on the development of the actual vocabulary and or the processes for vetting terms to be included in the vocabulary?
Yeah, so one of the issues is that we're not, you know, necessarily the people that decide on the controlled vocabularies and ontologies that we need, right? So the intelligence community and its stakeholders, its communities of interest, if you will, are the ones that bring these things forward. Now, there's obviously some examples that are immediate, like country codes. You know, there's a slew of controlled vocabularies that everyone knows is absolutely needed. And, in fact, you know, there's a core which is geospatial in nature, too. But then what you'd like to do is develop processes for governance, development, and technical support. These are kind of emerging. One of the issues that we're addressing right now is that there is some reorganization going on, and so some of the organizations are kind of shifting a bit. So we think that this effort will continue, but it remains to be seen, you know, where it's going to end up. I don't know if that answered you, but.
Do you have any notional ideas of how the process would go for introducing germs?
Yeah, I mean, what we did was we developed pretty elaborate process models that aren't displayed here for maybe some specific reasons. But these process models actually show, you know, or try to guide a community of interest who is interested in a controlled vocabulary or ontology. I mean, do you really need it? Is there one that already exists? So there's process models for governance, development, and technical support, both enterprise and community of interest levels, because they're a little bit distinct. So they are defined, and they could be used, institutionalized within the community.
One more question, Paul.
So a new standard for products in the intelligence community is perhaps not to mislead, to include sources as part of the product in a way that's not historically been done. Do you think this creates a new opportunity for leading not just, well, the controlled vocabulary, but even an ontology to better accomplish that?
So, I mean, it's always useful to, you know, have trace back, you know, so have something come from a particular authority, right? So if it's a country code, it's probably an ISO standard, you know, there may be multiple ones, and you may want to map those together and so forth, but having the source metadata of various kinds associated with these would be extremely useful. That could be everything from, you know, the data that connects to the ontologies and controlled vocabularies, because there may be levels of accuracy and, you know, quality associated with those.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
thank you. Let's go to Luis Bermudez and discussion on the Ocean Semantic Mediator. Last year, Luis did a presentation on some of the work that was being done then, and I guess this will be an update. Luis is a lead for coastal oceans research with the Southeastern University's Research Association and is working with ontologies and semantics in the oceans environment.
Better? So I need to go back and repeat everything? No. So we need to know how our sensors identify wave height, chlorophyll fluorometer, harmful algorithms, all these terms. How do we identify them? How do we relate them? So again, presenting these slides, this is community of practice. We all speak different languages. As is an example, different representations for one concept. Or even, there is SST, and you could have super transport SST, so it means two different things. And here, in a metadata level also, if you have one community that has metadata, for example, using CDM is the content model used by an atmospheric community to design ontology representations of those metadata instances, you will see that if some folks are talking about CDM variables, or others are talking about observed properties. So at that metadata level, how do you really connect these two different representations? So why don't we do semantic mediation? You have two communities. Hey, let's put one piece of the puzzle together so we are able to interact with these two communities. There are different ways to map, right? You can say there's same as, subclass, is type of, narrower than any other type of relations, but the idea is that you have two well-established control vocabularies published that you can interact because they are in the same way in Excel or, you know, whatever, but at least it's the same tool that I'm going to use to create those relations. And then if a community selects one ontology to interoperate, meaning, oh, yes, we're going to map to this ontology. And I think this ontology for features is good, or this ontology for units is good. Let's all use it inside that community. And then we start making this, because that community agrees on this unit ontology, this other community agrees on another unit ontology, and then we can easily just point to God all at the same time. So, semantic mediator. And this is sort of, you know, the semantic, the service-oriented architecture, where you have different sources. You have here some middleware, and then you have decision support tools. Very important is the service registry. You have a semantic mediator that is parallel to the service registry. And so this is a little more detail. Or within the semantic mediator, has different components, like vocabulary builder, creates vocabulary even for simple taxonomies. And then there is an ontology registry. And then it's a semantic engine that gets these ontologies and put it in a big graph so then others could query it. Cool, for example, faceted search, catalog, etc. So now let's talk about a specific ontology registry and repository, which is the MMI created one. It's a real tool. It's on the web. It's free for everyone to use. It's based on the bio portal. So you can create a new ontology. You can register a new ontology. You can upload your new ontology. It's very interesting that there is some metadata attached to that ontology. For example, here. You can even put some license or permission issues. We keep track automatic versioning and revision of these ontologies. So this is part of, you know, somehow governance and how they're going to do it with different with the updates. So we all handle that. And if you don't have, like here, if you don't have these dates and you just don't use the date, you can get the latest automatically. So we have also worked on that part. So previous mappings to other ontologies will not break. You can browse. So I don't know right now how many ontologies we have, but I think more than 100 that people just are submitting and are mapping. I'm going to use a mapping, show a mapping tag later. You can get the RDF, right? You can use the SparkQL queries. So there is an endpoint SparkQL for HTTP GET post. There is a form that you can just play with SparkQL constructs if you are not very familiar with the SparkQL query language. And again, to get back this RDF, you can see that there is an ODC URN, right? So now it's handling URNs. Before, we were only handling URIs. So now there is a way to also provide services for URNs. And this is how you can get them. And then we have tools that allow easy mapping. And easy mapping is that in our community, we found out that in order to interpret, we don't need it, you know, a lot of sophisticated constructs. That for most of the cases, if we have a list of parameters that one community publishes and a list of parameters that another community publishes, we put that in a language that we are able to interpret. This is our. And then we make mappings. And here the mappings are available as RS. So we bring one ontology here. So once they are registered in ontology, it's just add an ontology. You search for in either of the you know, forms. You can do regular expressions to get, for example, to query on the description of each term. You need to create the mapping. That mapping is registered in the repository, and then you can access via SparkQL the mapping. So you can say, give me all the narrower terms and X with broader terms. So please give feedback to the MMI registry if you want to use it. So this is the link, mmiw.org. MMI also collaborates with OOR, Open Ontology Repository, and with BioPortal. Now, I'm going to briefly discuss some of the projects that we are using this semantic mediation approach. First is the OOR Ocean Observatories Initiative. It's about 300 million project NSF, where they're going to put observatories in different regions of the world. Very sophisticated observatories. These are, for example, high-definition cameras under the sea connected by high-bandwidth cable. These cameras turn on when something is happening. They will try by sensing, they will try to understand how big is the animal that they're sensing, if it is of interest, then start the video capturing. And there is a thematic framework prototype, which I'm leading, and it's a form of the main components that we're testing. So we have a thematic registrar repository, the MMI one. We have a harvester that converts the metadata instances to OWL. We have a faceted browser, which is also built on ontologies. We have a metadata registry and a thematic media wiki, which allow the community to see the ontologies in a nice way, to submit comments, to make changes, to add rules, etc. We have sequence diagrams, and there are links to the page of how these different components interact. For example, here you can see that there's a facet user interface that say, hey, MMIOR, please give me the facets. Yes. And then I go to the registry, which is Iberian. Please give me the records. If Iberian checks its knowledge base. So all that we are testing to see how metadata registries and ontologies work. And this project is to reduce the risk of technologies that we're going to use at the OI. The International Cultural Atlas Network, which next meeting is in Italy next week, in Trieste. I'm very happy to be there. And we have different atlases which are publishing, again, also using OGC services. This is WMS, the Agile Network. So each map is registered in a record, which is called via an ISO record, and that ISO record is tagged with keywords that can be found in ontology, so this can be all related. This is sort of the architecture. So there is a central icon ontology. Each participant, they have their own ontology, they create mappings, and the data is available via standardized service. So you can see here, for example, how we use global themes, and all the ontologies are based on the main ISO categories, ISO 1 and 115. I'm going to read very fast because I figured out that we are hungry. At least I am hungry. So if I'm going too fast, we'll say, hey, stop. And another interesting thing is annotation of services. So before, keywords, for example, only allow streams, simple streams. Now we are seeing that even in ISO 19139 and in SOS, Sensor Observation Services, you are allowed to tag services with URIs, which provide rich thematic content. So that's another trend that we are trying to capture. Sometimes this is called semantic annotation. Another project is the OGC Ocean Science and Superiority Experiment, which is in reaching phase two right now. So it's a world initiative to try to advance sensor observation services. Within that, we define an observation based on O&M, so an observation of a procedure, estimation value, property of future features, all those concepts lead an ontology. So we have a group working on a procedure ontology or future features ontology, on types of results ontology, etc. So, for example, you can create a graph like this. Observation, well, it's a water-based platform, and there's a URI identifying that a moored buoy is a water-based platform, so water temperature as a unique identifier, all those leads in ontology, and you can relate all these. Again, important semantic annotation in web services. This is an example of SOS. And the article is very similar. You have a service registry. You have an semantic mediator. Have a data provider register the vocabulary, register the mappings, and then the data user or the services that are using those services could use the semantic mediator to get the different mappings, ontologies, vocabularies, rules, etc. And we have a user interface that it's able to categorize all the different sensor observations. We have about 1,000 platforms, and these are, let's say, standard variables that integrated ocean observing systems, NOAA has defined and say, hey, these are the core variables that we need to concentrate on these years. Okay, so let's design an ontology, and let's create a little passive search that is able to categorize the services with these core variables, which are very important to know. So we want to know which platforms are providing seawater temperature. So you can see, and this is just for the purpose of showing, that it's mapping to all these terms that are being used inside SOAs. And we're using ontologies to map those so the faceted search tool is able to categorize those services. Also within this project, the Ocean Science and Superlative Experiment, we have created a simple EC SensorML web creator. So we found out that, well, SensorML is very complex. It's a standard that is used to describe SensorML, sensors, platforms, systems. And we create a user interface, and then the user interface is attached with vocabularies that live at MMI. So whenever you are describing your sensor, you will get a drop-down list of, okay, now, fill your variable. So we are fixing the problem from the start. Okay, use control vocabulary when you are creating the sensor ML description. And even we have sensor manufacturers in the geographic community that are buying to this idea and are, you know, using some of these tools because they're asking, hey, we want to create a sensor ML, please give us a tool. So this is like my view of what I would like to see at the end. This is, you know, a portal that has a lot of different facets, data, numerical models, publication, photos, images. And it's categorized here. You can see a picture. All that information is integrated. And so you can think that those are facets. And you can, for example, see publications that refer to a region. Of course, this example could extrapolate to any other domain. But, you know, that's sort of the idea that I think ontologies will do good is trying to integrate and categorize all this data for faceted rows or for workflow composition or whatever. So conclusion, and I think I really did this very fast. So one, services responses need to be semantically annotated one way or another, and at some point needs to be converted to ontology graphs. Maybe part of it, maybe all of it, but in order to provide inference and to provide categorization of services, this needs to be done. Ontology registry is key, even if you have it in an informal way where it's a graph that is sitting there somewhere, but it helps facilitate, share, publish, access, and resolve URIs. And important also, resolve URNs, which the resolvability of URNs are not that easy. Different components are needed. So it's better to not have like all the harvester and all of those components in one tool. But I think it's good if we have different components. So we have metadata registry, we have harvester, we have user interface, workflow tools, and we identify them early on and we put it in our service architecture. And then, you know, by sequence diagrams or whatever, we understand what services, interfaces, operations we need for these different components to communicate each other. And then I think communities of practice need to select common ontologies that they need to share. So right at the beginning, you say, let's say you have a prototype and you have two communities and you want to integrate them. Well, you need to map their terminology to something, either select their ontology, or a third ontology, and start to create mapping. You need to do that. You need to select one. Doesn't matter. Yes, select it for the purpose of satisfying the user needs. If the user says, well, I really need to discover if there are harmful ontologies in this region, okay, decompose the use case, create an ontology that only captures what the user at the end wants, and then map to that metadata terms and the data that, you know, different communities are using. And I think that's all. These are the different links. And this is my email if you need more information. And I'm sorry, I really want very fast, but trying to catch up with the time. Questions?
Thank you, Larice. Do we have any questions?
Well, just one point. Larice, you are going to be able to stay around and be part of the discussion this afternoon in the roundtable?
Yes, I'm going to stay.
Okay, so one of our topics is to follow on this.
Okay.
Yes.
Your work with SensorML is actually pretty interesting. But I was wondering if you've noticed what we've noticed in the ISR community, which is you have two taxonomical breaks. One is the technology type and then the community of what it's observing. Like LiDARs are multi-mission type sensors. They can see clouds. They can see WMD events. They can see lots of different things. But the community is different than the technology.
Yes. Yes, yes, it is. And we are going to have, for example, for the OI prototype, I think so far it's a simple prototype and we have like 7 ontologies. And it's very simple. The trick is that they are all in the same way, so we are able to interact with them and say things about concepts that are already sitting in ontologies. So you fill your full graph. You know, LinkedIn has these experiments. So let's create 1 billion graphs and let's see how we are able to talk about, you know, these different concepts that are distributed. So there is no problem with that.
Does anybody online have a question? Okay, thank you very much, Luis. Is Mike Dean on the line?
Yes, I am.
Mike, would you object to holding your presentation until after we get back from lunch?
I guess we could do that. What time would that be?
What we'd like to do is, well, the cafeteria here closes at 1:30 Eastern time, so if we could take 40 minutes to do lunch and reconvene at 1:30 Eastern time, I think that would be good, because I think everybody here is getting pretty hungry.
Okay.
So will that work for you?
Yes, that'd be fine.
I do want to recognize one link I think that Luis did make as one of his concluding points, is that ontology repositories are key, and what Mike Dean is going to talk about next is an ontology repository, so hold that thought. If you can, while you digest your lunches. So, Gary, do you have logistics comments?
Whole thing. We're going to leave the line on. I'm told the best way to do this is just to leave the line open while we're logged in. And people can log in and out. But we're going to stay logged in, and the same number will apply for the first two parts of the afternoon. Then we'll break into two different, we'll announce that. We'll break into two different caller numbers for IDs. Anyway.
Okay, so what we'll do is, take a break for lunch, come back at 40 minutes from whatever the time is where you are. We have two presentations, the ontology repository and then a brief out on the Terra Cognita workshop. And then we will do breakout sessions, and we may need to reorganize what we originally had thought on the breakout session. So thanks, and we'll see you in a little bit.